Yeah, another absolutely thrilling weekend of the Isuzu Ute A-League has been run and won. Three games had last-minute goals. We had a 3-3 thriller in the grand final replay. A couple of brothers taking each other on, new league leaders. And this, of course, leads into a week where we have a Socceroos squad announced. So much to discuss.
Now, Perez! And for the first time in five matches, the Wanderers have scored a first-half goal.
They go looking for a third. They've got it. And Costa Barbarousis, after waiting so long for a goal, has two in 2 minutes.
With Bordaroli! And Bruno is at it again. Torres follows up, and it is a hat-trick. A hat-trick for the champions against the Premiers in the grand final rematch.
Squares it up, surely! There's the equaliser in the 97th minute.
Back post, and it's headed in by Josh Ridston, captain fantastic.
What the heck was that? Welcome to the final edition of 2023 of the official Isuzu Ute A-League podcast. My name is David Wiener. Looking forward to discussing a whole heap with you over the next hour or so. Dave Davutovic, back again. How are you, mate? Great to see you.
All the better, particularly for having our fellow rock star guest, Jake Rosengarten, on the show.
Yes, well, welcome, Jake. The brains behind A-League.com.au and KeepUp.com.au. Great to see you on the show. You've spared yourself for an hour. How nice of you.
What an intro, firstly. Let me just say I've had the best festive season gift there is, an appearance on the official Isuzu Ute A-League podcast.
Very good. Well, glad. Looking forward to hearing your insights over the next little while. Jake, what was your highlight of the weekend, mate? We always start with that, and good luck picking the bones out of this because there was a fair bit to tuck into.
Geez, the highlight. It's got to be that grand final rematch, doesn't it? Geez, it was good. Angel Torres with a hat trick. I mean, Joshy Nisbet doing Joshy Nisbet things. You got to love it.
Dave, did you love it?
I did. I'd loved it. I was there enjoying it, just, you know, watching from the stands. But to be honest, for me, the highlight of the round was Friday night, the Aloisi derby. Dead set, if they weren't brothers, I reckon it would have been absolutely on for young and old between John and Ross Aloisi. I think that's what probably, like, you know, they've both got a healthy dose of white line fever. Ross probably a little bit more so. Dead set. If it wasn't his brother John coaching the other side, I reckon they would have been absolutely going for it. But there was a fair bit of drama. We had some really good players stepping up and scoring goals. And it was just a great weekend of action.
Yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit more. And great plug there for A-League's All Access this Thursday, which is behind the scenes of that Aloisi derby, John and Ross, and the way the two heckled each other and or tried to pretend they didn't mind, but no doubt somewhere in there they absolutely did. I'm torn for mine. There's so many options, but I'll go with the last thing we saw, and that was Alex Paulsen, who we've spoken about on this podcast again, but to go to and make another penalty save off Davia, no less, on Monday night at MacArthur. That is a star that is absolutely rising. We're talking about him a little bit more in the podcast today. Gents, we're going to kick off with the grand final replay on Sunday evening because it was an absolute cracker.
Drives it in low, Lapani! And maybe he has salvaged a share of the spoils in this thrilling grand final rematch.
This was everything about the league at its best, a 3-3 thriller, back and forward. Angel Torres silencing the doubters with a really high-quality hat-trick. But Melbourne City got off to an early start with Yakalis' second-minute goal. And then Arslan and Lapane, drama with a scoreline that went back and forth and back and forth. Dave, a really enjoyable game, a classic A-League's game. What did you make of it?
Yeah, it was a ripper. A little bit different to the grand final of last season. Certainly wasn't as one-sided. Real Jekyll and Hyde performance from both teams. We kind of saw the best and the worst of them, within a game. Melbourne City kind of intrigued me. I know I've mentioned it a few times. They're a work in progress. I thought they might have kicked a little bit more than what they have thus far. In many ways, it was an unconvincing performance from them. In saying that, the late equaliser could be the thing that sparks them into life. I think they would have gone back into the sheds after the games with their tails up because they rescued a point, you know, when it appeared that, you know, they'd be losing three. So, so much to work on. I mean, obviously, you know, Lecky's out, Naboot, you know, is coming back. You'd imagine they might do some business in January as well to strengthen the squad, particularly with Aurelio Vidmar only coming in. You know, in the last 5 or 6 weeks. But, yeah, Central Coast are interesting as well because I think they're really starting to kick and we're starting to see signs of life there and, you know, the attack's starting to fire. We'll touch more on Torres in a moment. But, yeah, I think the Mariners, even though they'd be absolutely gutted at, you know, conceding that late goal, I reckon there's a lot of positives to take out of that from them away from home.
Agree with you there, Dave. I think there was a very interesting part of this match for the Mariners. I mean, obviously in the first half they looked not great at all, let's be honest. It was pretty rusty from them. They went behind. They weren't looking good. And then at halftime, Mark Jackson made a tweak that changed the entirety of this game. And at halftime, Mark Jackson looks at his side and he goes, you know what, I've got to change something. And off comes young Miguel DiPizio, who actually had their best chance of the opening half. On comes Harrison Steele into midfield, Josh Nisbet into the 10, Marco Tullio out to the right wing, and suddenly Josh Nisbet, the shortest man on the pitch, made this game his own, and he was everywhere. He created everything. They're moving forward. The Mariners move on the attack, some good finishing from Angel Torres, and suddenly Mariners are looking a team again. And that was really nice to see, and I think Nisbet... brilliant.
Yeah, and part of the reason why this was such a great game was there were shades of the old Mariners. It was really entertaining in that second half, end to end. And you know, Andy Harper referenced in commentary, well, they don't have Benny and Kalolo, but finally maybe Angel Torres has filled that void. But we can't not talk about this day without talking a little bit more about Josh Nisbet. But let's hear first what his boss had to say about him after the game.
I said after the game, he's a really, really intelligent footballer. He knows the game. He's a student of the game as well. He likes to analyse. He likes to look back at training and games. He likes to talk football. And you can tell that on the pitch because when you tell him something, he does it straight away. He can play in any position, Nizzy. I think he could play in any position bar goalkeeper. But yeah, he can play more advanced. Or the only thing that was missing today for him was probably a goal. And he had a couple of chances towards the end. So it'd have been nice for him to get that. But his all-round performance, particularly in that second half, was really, really good.
Yeah, it deserves the praise, Joshy Nisbet. I mean, you can't miss him when he comes on. I was explaining to a few people sitting alongside me that, yeah, he was the shortest player in the A-League and, you know, a bit of that backstory. You know, fascinating to see him evolve. I don't think many people predicted that he would be in this position that he is, be the player that he is at the moment. But the way he's going, I mean, he's represented Australia at youth level, I think, back in 2022. But the way he's going, I mean, a Socceroos cap at some stage in his career is certainly not beyond the realms. Like, he clearly works hard. You know, as mentioned, he's a student of the game. And he just seems to have a fantastic attitude. And, you know, just because you're short, I mean, this is the beauty of football. It doesn't, you know, discriminate from a size viewpoint. I mean, some of the great players in the history of the game have been tiny. Maradona, Messi, Xavi, Iniesta, Pelé, so on and so forth.
And the thing about Nisbet as well is when you look at when the Mariners were at their best last year, they turbocharged through the back end of the season and into the finals with Josh Nisbet as the catalyst that in the centre of the park. When he's at his best, he can compete with anyone in this competition. And with the right environment with him around the Mariners in form, Jake, that is very much a possibility. What did you Aurelio Vidmar said, you know, he said that when the group is in sync, they're hard to beat. But they're still an interesting work in progress too, aren't they? Where, you know, it's been a while since he's been in charge. Maybe the Asian commitments have been an issue there too. Do you see them as sort of being in a decent position to be able to run through into the new year and surge back to where they would expect to be? Or where do you read City at the moment?
I think they're an interesting proposition. I mean, I think for me, the travel is a major factor. I mean, the AFC Champions League, they've been here, there and everywhere. Jamie McLaren referenced it the other week briefly. I think his lack of sharpness and he's been carrying an injury too is a factor as well. He hasn't finished as clinically as he has recently. I think obviously under Aurelio Vidmar, they are, as you say, a work in progress, just trying to land on that style and their rhythm. I think Tolga Arslan will and continue to be the key for this team. He is unbelievable. I think don't quote me here, but I think arguably the best and most technical player in the competition.
Well, you are on the record, Jake. So you are.
To do quote me. But I think, yeah, he'll remain the key. But I think they're still sort of obviously trying to find their solidity at the back. They're leaking a few too many goals. But also their rhythm with the ball and their penetration moving forward isn't what it used to be. And obviously you talk about Lekki, yeah. Naboot, They're big misses.
Yeah. Let's talk about Lecky now, Dave, not just in the context of Melbourne City. Well, I want to know, you know, how you think they deal without him going forward. And then let's change that conversation and change pace for a minute and talk about Lecky in the context of the Socceroos. 4 to 6 weeks, there's an Asian Cup squad that's chosen on that's announced on Friday. The first game for the Socceroos is on January 13. So it's a real race for the clock. It wouldn't be a major tournament without a big star racing the clock and a coach deciding whether to gamble on them being fit, say, for the knockout stages. What's your view on all of those factors with Matt Lecky?
Mate, I want to unpack all of them, but I just wanted to rewind for a second at the risk of not covering it because Angel Torres, the Colombian.
I was going to say, absolutely.
Yeah, a special shout out to him. His performance on Sunday was absolutely outstanding. I mean, his goals were brilliant. His finishes, I think, you know, particularly two of them were a lot harder than what they looked. And his composure, the way he sold that candy for that, I think it was the third goal, and just beautifully slotted at home was absolutely sensational. Having composure is one of the most difficult things to acquire as a footballer, particularly having composure in that front third and in that penalty box. And he's absolutely got it in spades. So I can't wait to see what he delivers for the rest of the season. He's been an outstanding signing, and when I look at him and I look at Alu Kwol, who came off the bench and will only get better as the season wears on, I think this Mariners side could kick. Jake, did you want to throw anything in before I get on to Lecky?
Well, I was just going to say to Jake as well, I think also some of the criticism of Angel Torres has been completely premature. He got a decent goal tally now with the hat-trick, but in fits and starts, you've seen there's a quality of a player, and we should know now after nearly 20 years, it is not easy to acclimatise quickly to the Isuzu UDA League, and once you do, the foreigners do show their quality.
That's exactly it. There was a tweet that went semi-viral on the weekend, basically labelling Angel Torres one of the worst foreigners the A-League's ever seen, which the guy's played, seven games. He's 23 years old. He's playing in a country where he doesn't know deleted. The language.
What was that, Dave? Sorry?
I suspect that tweet may have been deleted since.
Oh. You'd hope so. So obviously he goes on and scores a hat-trick after that, hilariously, as it always is. But he's 23 years old. He doesn't know the language. He's moved halfway around the world. And actually, if you look at what he's produced so far, he's played 12 games for the Mariners in all competitions for 5 goals and 5 assists. What do you want from the guy?
He copped the red card as well. And to your point, South American players have been a bit hit and miss. And a lot of it comes down to acclimatisation. It's been difficult for some of them with the language barrier and, the lifestyle being away from their families. So, some of them have just not worked out in the A-League and, gone back overseas and been outstanding. So, credit to him and he'll only get better. I mean, who knows? He could be – I mean, Bruno Fornaroli is going to take some catching, but if he keeps going like this, Torres, I mean, he could be within striking distance by the end of the season.
And look, before we come back to you, Dave, on Lecky, just to conclude on the Mariners, I think onwards and upwards, to concede, we spoke on this podcast, we were worried about them early doors. We were. The signs weren't good. It is an absolute credit to what has happened at the club on the field over the last couple of weeks that they're starting to show signs of a rebirth and rejuvenation, and the league is better for that because of the entertainment they provide, the vibe they provide, and I'm looking forward to seeing them continue on that trajectory, playing great attacking football. I think Jacob Farrell's return has helped too. Great young player who we'll touch on a little bit later in the podcast too, but fantastic to see the Mariners there, and it was a great, really entertaining grand final rematch. But Dave, back to you on Lecky, because that's part of the fallout of this game as well, is Melbourne City's approach to replacing Matt Lecky. How badly they've been missing a fully fit and available Lecky, and then the consequences for the Socceroos.
Yeah, well, they've certainly missed a fully fit Lecky, because even when he did return for those few games, he wasn't fully fit. He was just coming back from his injury. He played, 3 games in the space of a week? Maybe it was a little bit overcooked, obviously with the soft tissue injury. We saw when he played the influence that he has. Even Lecky at sort of 70-80% coming back to his best has a huge influence on that team. He's viewed differently since, in the last 12 months. He came back from, his long stint in Germany. He's well-regarded by his teammates. He's a physical beast. But off the back of his exploits in Qatar with the Socceroos, I think everyone's viewed him differently, including his teammates. Now, It's not a serious injury, so it will be really interesting to see what the Socceroos do with Lecky. Now, my understanding is that there is an outside chance that he may still be selected for the Asian Cup squad. The squad obviously being announced on Friday, I believe.
Correct.
Yeah, so we're going to – it'll be really interesting to see what decision Graham Arnold makes. I suspect he will make a call by then. But, yeah, as far as I'm aware, yeah, he still is in with a shout of potentially making the squad. It wouldn't be dissimilar to – I mean, I guess you can help me out, guys, with some other examples. I guess the most recent example and one that probably backfired, I guess, was Kaya Simon, you know, being picked, you know, for the Matildas in the 2023 World Cup squad, and she didn't play. She was very close to playing. My understanding was that, you know, she was kind of getting prepared to come on and take a penalty, you know, for one of those shootouts. But, yeah, Lecky, you know, as it stands, I think would be a lot closer and a chance of playing some minutes, you know, potentially at the back end of the group phase. But then it just comes down to Graham Arnold and whether, you know, he decides to take that risk and, you know, I guess how important Lecky is to the squad. I think we can answer that question. He's absolutely crucial, but I guess it's, you know, incorporating all of those other things. What kind of message does that send to the squad, etc.?
Refresh my memory. I think it was a similar scenario with Martin Boyle last year. He had a niggle going into the World Cup. Obviously, they discovered an injury that they weren't expecting during the World Cup, but that's a sign that of a player of that importance is someone that Graham Arnold will give every chance to be fit. Oh, I would have loved to have seen the opportunity to have Goodwin, Boyle and Lecky all fit and vying for selection and fighting for a first 11 spot. But, Jake, I think if you run the numbers, I think – particularly with the date, like you got to think through the group stage of the Asian Cup. There is an opportunity to give Matt Lecky the 4 to 6 weeks needed to be fit. There's some great options if he doesn't take him. You've still got the likes of veteran Awomabil, Sammy Silvera. But given that Brandon Borrello is already out, I think to lose someone of Lecky's stature, I think you give him every chance.
I think you do. The one thing about Matt Lecky that I think has to be said is actually just Matt Lecky's a unicorn. Matt Lecky is a player who can play either wing. He can play up top. He can play as a 10. He can play as an 8 if you need to. He actually, you're not just picking one player who can slot into one spot. You're picking a guy who can play everywhere essentially in the front third, which is invaluable, particularly in tournament football and the adaptability of what the Socceroos need. I think picking an injured player is a very, very tricky line to go down. I mean, if it were me, I don't envy Graham Arnold. He has to make this decision. It is all about Lecky's condition. I mean, particularly given the fact he has just briefly come back from injury, been injured again. I'm not sure I'd be taking him personally.
My only thought with that is Dave, is you're starting with Goodwin and Boyle if Lecky's not fit. So you've got an out and out left and right attacking player that you're not losing, you know, you sleep at night picking those guys. Mitch Duke is the out and out lead. And when we get to victory in Sydney later, we'll talk a little bit more about Bruno Fornaroli's case as well, which we've spoken about for the last couple of weeks. But with that in mind, that's why, Jake, maybe I do err on that side. What do you make of that, Dave?
Yeah, it's a really tough one to judge. Firstly, we've got to work out, you know, where Blecky's at physically. Will he be available for game 2, game 3, or the knockout phase? And then you work it from there. If he's capable of playing minutes in the knockout phase, like genuinely, you know, being available for the second or the third game, I'd probably pick him because, you know, he's a quality player. He's getting towards the end of his career, he'll want to play. He'll be highly motivated to play. You back yourself in to, you know, get through the group, hopefully probably top the group, you know, and then you've got another 2 weeks where he can play an absolutely pivotal role. The World Cup was a little bit different. There's no guarantee of getting out of the group. I mean, Aiden Hrustić is probably the one that, you know, I think of at the World Cup where, you know, he was an injury doubt. They gave him every opportunity and, you know, he played, was it, I think, two appearances, if not one. for that knockout game. And he just, you know, you could see he didn't have that match fitness, that sharpness there. He had the confidence, though. He wanted the ball, he demanded the ball, but just couldn't get going. So, you know, if Lecky comes in even at game three, he's potentially getting 3-4 games under his belt, you know. But so even if that key performance is, and again, you don't want to get ahead of yourself, but if it ends up being in the semi-final or the finals, I think you take him.
I'm going to skip ahead a little bit. Producer Ben, I'm going to skip ahead a little bit here while we're on the Socceroos rip and tear. So I'm kind of with you, Dave. I've got Duke, I've got Boyle, I've got Goodwin, I've got Lecky. By my maths, there's two other spaces up for grabs. Let's have a listen to what Tony Popovic had to say about his striker, Bruno Fornaroli, who has been in extraordinary touch this season, 12 goals in 8.
He has to be in the conversation because he's scoring goals. He was chosen, what was it, 18 months ago or a year ago? You know, so if he's 36 now, he was 35, selected for Socceroos. So age wasn't an issue then, and he's playing better now. You know, we're increasing the pool of players that he can select from. Well, that's a credit to the players here and credit to Bruno. You know, if he's not there, we'll all be very proud of him, and we'll try and do well in the meantime while he's away, if that's the case. If it's not, he'll continue doing what he's doing, and we'll try and help him in situations that he can keep getting goals.
So Bruno Fornaroli, Cassini Yenge. Over the weekend, Alan Stagic has championed Adam Taggart, who's up to 5 goals as well. Rob Stanton has championed someone you did last week, Dave, Apostolos Stamatopoulos, who is a reborn here in the A-League, doing so very well. And then there's, of course, Jamie McLaren. I think there's two spots for all those players. I'm going to put you guys on the spot. Who are you picking?
Go on, Dave.
Silence breaks into the podcast. It's not great on an audio medium.
So Taggart, Stamatopoulos,
Bruno Fornaroli, Jamie McLaren,
Yenge,
and Cassini Yenge.
So you reckon two spots?
Jeez, it's tight, isn't it?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's bloody tough.
Look, we haven't gone through the whole squad, so you can also, you know, you can pick three if you want. You just have to leave a midfielder or a defender back home.
Yeah, well, let's pick three. It'll make things a little bit easier for starters.
Always taking the easy route, Dave.
We need a bit of depth in this squad.
So it's going to take 24 players. Take the full 50 shortlist.
Up front. But I think it's probably a step too soon for Stamatopoulos. Just doesn't have that body of work, although I love, you know, the body of work that he's produced this season. If he's still going like this in 6 to 12 months' time, then, you know, he's absolutely worth a World Cup shout. You know, again, Tags, as he left, he's run a little bit late. I really like what he's doing. I like the goals that he's scoring. You know, he only missed, I think, one game this season. But, you know, he's definitely in with a shout. I mean, Bruno, it's hard not to take Bruno. I mean, if you're going on form, I think you have to take him. You know, McLaren's been a mainstay in the Socceroos. He knows how they play. He scored the hat-trick the other week. He's A-League form, and goal-scoring record hasn't been, outstanding this season, but he's now a proven performer at international level. So I think you go Bruno, Macca, and then it's one of... Hang on, am I missing someone?
No, Yenge.
Who was the other one?
Yenge. I think if you've got yourself out to 7, Jake, in that cohort, you're Fornaroli, your McLaren and Yenge, if you can take 7 attacking play.
Yeah.
Seven attacking players.
Thing with Yenge is he can certainly play in those wide roles. And, you know, I think I mentioned it last week. There's no reason why they can't play in a front two. And I'd imagine Arnie would be considering that as one of his options, you know, playing with a you know, front two. So, you know what? Why not take all of them? Let's just take all of them. We're going to be attacking anyway.
I'm just going to put it out there. I saw a tweet on the weekend, which I very much enjoyed, which was, it's not now whether Bruno Fornaroli is on the plane. It's what seat he's sitting in, which I thought was brilliant.
Just before we put you on the spot, Jake, I think, Dave, to answer your question, whether you take all of them or not, I think, and if you jump on keepup.com.au, I have had a crack at the squad to try and lay out all the contenders. And I think, in midfield, I've got, you know, Irvine's a lock, Backus a lock, Metcalf's a lock, McGree, if he's fit, a lock. Luongo, his recent selection suggests he's in with a shout. I think if you're taking that extra attacker, be it McLaren, be it Yenge, be it Fornaroli, it's probably at the expense of then that last midfielder, be it Alex Robertson, be it Aidan O'Neill or whoever else goes, Jake. Which way are you erring?
I think you probably need the extra midfielder for me. I think just from a depth perspective and looking at what we've got, and there are a good few frontline options in the Socceroos midfield these days. You talk about your Irvines, your Bacchuses, Luongo, those sorts of guys. I think we do need the depth. Alex Robertson is a name that has been thrown up. I mean, he obviously hasn't been in a squad for a little while. I mean, for me, he's playing unbelievably for Portsmouth, firstly, in their charge, looking for promotion to the championship, sitting top of League One. I'd be taking him 100%. I think this is where you talk about that squeeze on attackers. I mean, considering we've only been playing with one up top and you basically have your wingers locked in to start with Boyle and Goodwin, I mean, is taking an extra striker really the way to go? I think for me, I'd rather the extra midfielder.
Yeah, just on Robertson, I thought that was a glaring omission, the fact that he didn't make the Socceroos squad last time round after being in the October camp, I think it was, where they played over in the UK. His form has obviously improved, but he was in good form when that last squad was picked. So I'm not sure if something's up there, but the fact that he didn't make the squad would indicate to me that he might be a long shot for the Asian Cup. But it still begs the question, does Arnie take, you know, extra reinforcements in midfield or in attack?
Interesting stuff. Really interesting stuff. As I said, I had a crack. In theory, I think a player of Robertson's form and minutes makes him a compelling case. But I also think so does Yengi's. And the physical prowess he presents, his versatility, something different to the makeup of the current squad. Look, this is why we love tournaments. We love the selection conundrums that come into the build-up. Who's going to make it, the feel-good stories, the close shaves. Part of that will revolve around Matt Leckie. Part of that will revolve around Matt Ryan's fitness too. I think just to round that conversation out, I think obviously there's a strong chance Adelaide United's Joe Gauchy will be on the plane. I think there's a question then on exactly like Leckie. Does obviously Matt Ryan's fitness is, you know, he's given every opportunity to play, but then do you take one of the more experienced goalkeepers, does that bring in Andrew Redmayne back into the mix? Or, you know, does Ashley Maynard Brewer go with Gauchy and they fight for the number one spot? These are the debates that, you know, we're going to see over the next day or so. Are there any other thoughts, boys, you want to lay in on the Socceroos squad before we move on?
For mine, the squad will be picked Friday ahead of, you know, the next round of A-League games and overseas games. But it's not to say that these games won't factor in. I mean, in terms of, you know, form, I think Arnie's got a good idea of the squad. I mean, he'll let us know what that is on Friday, but I think there's still a lot of question marks in terms of that first 11. So I think we'll see, you know, some really highly motivated individuals, you know, come out and play this weekend. And players who miss out as well, you know, sometimes players can make, you know, there'll be players on standby, you know, they'll come out and make a statement, and someone outside of that squad could have an absolute blinder at the weekend and could, you know, come into the mix, be it injury or whatever it is. There's a lot of games coming up in this next, you know, little period. So I still think there's a few twists and turns to go.
Looking forward to seeing all that.
Setting up a great chance for two, and they take it. Costa Barbarousis, the end of a 17-game scoring drought.
MacArthur 0, Wellington 3. Just as MacArthur were looking to make that rise up the table, I think their travel, Jake, might have caught up with them. They've had an arduous schedule, and Wellington bounced back with a really impressive performance at MacArthur on Monday night. Bozidar Krajev with the goal. Costa Barbarousis ending a long drought with a brace. 3-0 win for Chiefi Italiano's side, but arguably the headline of the match was the performance as well, once again, of Alex Paulsen.
Absolutely agree with all of that. Alex Paulsen, 3 penalty saves at age 21 in his first 8 games of the season. That's unheard of. It's unbelievable. He deserves every headline that he's written recently. It's superb. I mean, God, you wish he was Australian. No, I'm just kidding. New Zealand have a good one there. They have a very good one there, and he'll obviously push for international duties there. But, yeah, Paulsen, unbelievable.
Just on that, Dave, really interesting comments from Italiano after the game. It sounds like he is a red-hot chance of a transfer in the next window, or there is immense interest in him. And that's that really interesting point in time. Italiano said he thinks he probably needs a few more games in this league, a bit more time in this league. Not going to stop him from going, doesn't want to not see his players get opportunity. But he's in that really delicate age of, do you get a huge amount of minutes and continue this incredible momentum he's got, or do you take the leap? But it's no surprise that there's great interest in him.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'd love to know what his, you know, buyout clause if he's got one, you know, what Wellington's stance is in terms of, you know, selling him, bottom line, et cetera, what their transfer strategy is. But, you know, the boy's done absolutely amazing over this season. I mean, obviously he was, you know, playing second fiddle to Ollie Sale last season, but this year he's got his opportunity and he's taken it with both hands or both gloves. He's been absolutely superb. And I can just picture a situation where, you know, he's recently got a New Zealand call-up, but, you know, they're playing in their qualifiers or, you know, potentially even in the 2026 World Cup, and they get to a shootout. Paulson's on the bench and they bring him on for the shootout to, you know, psych out Lionel Messi or some of the best strikers in the world. Look, he's a star. He's got this confidence about him. I think keepers, you know, 21 is not necessarily super young for a footballer, but for a goalkeeper, I think it is. They do tend to, you know, maybe start a little bit later and kick on a little bit longer. Certainly if you look at examples of, I don't know, Liam Reddy, Brad Jones, Mark Schwarzer, to name a few. So I think he's got a massive future ahead of him. Really excited to see how he evolves. I'll be staggered if they sell him in January, to be honest. Like, and I'd be staggered if he goes. Like, you've just started playing. Get games under your belt. Get a cup, you know, at least one, if not a couple of good seasons of regular football under your belt. Then you go, because then all of a sudden you can ride those bumps and the travails. If you're getting dropped, or you know you've got a you're battling for the number one shirt with another goalkeeper. If you've got 50, 60, 70, 80 games under your belt, you can recover a lot quicker than, you know, if you've only got 10 or 15. But, yeah, probably a bit selfish, because I'd love to see him in the A-League for at least another, you know, year or two.
Jake, before we kick on to the Liberty Next Gen Tracker in a moment, which Paulson may feature or he may not feature, who knows, I suspect he might. Other thoughts on this performance? Is it an amnesty for MacArthur, just given the crazy schedule they've had? And Wellington, A, character after their performance the week before, and B, some lovely football at times on Monday night.
Oh, at times last night, Wellington, liquid football, unbelievable to watch, stringing passes together, one-touch stuff, like beautiful. I think it's absolutely that for MacArthur. I mean, firstly, a really, really promising crowd at MacArthur, it should be noted. One of the biggest of the season, if not their biggest of the season on a Monday night. Beautiful. But I think, yeah, just that AFC travel has definitely caught up to Milos Dojovski's side. They just looked tired. They had a lot of the ball, but they just didn't have that energy, that zip to really cut through and create and look like that energetic force that they have in recent times with your Uli Devias and a fleet-footed couple of wingers too.
And by the way, like, good luck with tipping this season. Like, fair dinkum, you know, going into this game, I'm sure you'd put your house on it, but you'd be pretty confident about, you know, MacArthur getting up at home against Wellington, who, you know, had a pretty dire performance at home to Newcastle Jets. I mean, MacArthur been absolutely flying, you know, beating Sydney FC away, you know, great win in the AFC Cup, and they go and cop, you know, three of the best at home. So, yeah, it's been really tough to tip, but, you know, as a consequence, it's been a really exciting season, just super unpredictable.
I mean, straight off the week that we sit here on the podcast and say MacArthur are here to stay, it's not an aberration, leading the table. We were at a point going into that game where actually if they had won, and this probably sums up our Isuzu Ute League, the latter first and second would have been the flip of last season's second last and last victory in MacArthur. We didn't quite get that narrative, so I'll just give it away anyway because it was too good not to use, but it sort of sums up why our league is so compelling to watch. Now, Paulson, we mentioned the Liberty Next Gen Track are the ones to watch. Well, we look at the players who started the year at 21 years old or under, and we're going to be looking at who are the best of the crop coming through, and there are plenty of them. Of course, last month, if you missed it, we had Nestor Irinkunda in spot one with 5 points, Thomas Waddingham, Jaden Kacharski, Rafael Borges Rodriguez, and Ryan Teague as our top five. Now, Jake, I don't know how Alex Paulson doesn't make the list this month. Where is he for you?
I've got him top of the pops, mate. I think he takes the big five.
Yeah, after the body of work we've just suggested, throwing in that those penalty saves are against Jamie McLaren, Adam Taggart, and Ulysses Davila, no less. I think he has been one of the stories of the season. Do you have any arguments with that, Dave?
Yeah, I'd probably respectfully disagree. Woo. And I'd go with Jacob Farrell as one, to be honest. I think he's been outstanding under the circumstances. It's been a really tough season for Central Coast Mariners. He's really had to step up, and I think he's been a big reason for their spike in form. So, yeah, Farrell for mine. But look, Paulson's been outstanding. It's almost a toss of the coin.
Well, the toss of the coin is that I had Paulson with 5 points. So we'll go with Paulson with 5, Farrell with 4.
I'm happy with that. I'll have it. Even though the goalkeepers union is definitely about to put a hit out on David Davutovic.
I'll throw out a couple of names, guys, and let's get the last three spots. We've got Ryan Teague, who was in last month's list. We've got Milanovic. We've got Jed Drew. We've got Clayton Taylor. Any others there that anyone wants to throw out? Dave, you had a couple of others, and we'll fight it out over the last three spots.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you look at the stats, Noah Botic hasn't, you know, he hasn't scored the goals that he's wanted to, he's needed to, and that Western United have needed from him, but he's threatening. There's, you know, little parts of his game, little sparks that I really like, and he's really had to step up and lead the line in, you know, the virtual absence of Nikita Rukavica. So, you know, again, even though he didn't score on Friday, I thought his performance was very good. Archie Goodwin coming back into the side, you know, off the bench for the most part, but, you know, he scored, he's showing energy. I mean, he was lurking at that back post, you know, ready to tap in that late equaliser that Bahadur ended up tapping in. So he's really, really knocking on the door of that top five. But, yeah, I think the names you mentioned are very good. I mean, you know, Ryan Teague, he's probably not going to win too many man of the match honours in the position and the role that he plays, but he's been super impressive, you know, really sort of pulling the strings and commanding that midfield and just providing that equilibrium for that super exciting Melbourne Victory attack.
That is the first use of the word equilibrium on the official Isuzu Ute A-League podcast.
And I'm pretty sure it was the first use of the word unicorn as well.
That's what I bring, mate.
Very good. I think Teague is probably the one player that actually appears in both lists. And I think if you talk to the point you made about Alex Paulson earlier, Dave, and maybe riding it out a bit longer in the A-League to get that feet under the table, I think that this list shows that. 5 players last month, we've almost wiped them all out, another list this month, and it shows the journey you take as a young player and that this environment is a really good one to build up that portfolio of games and experiences to get there. Jake, I'll let you pick the last two spots. We've got 5 points to Alex Paulson, 4 points to Jacob Farrell, 1 point to Ryan Teague. Who gets the other two slots?
For me, I think you can't leave out Clayton Taylor. I think he's been incredible for Newcastle in the last month. He has been superb. He's been almost virtually ever present. He's been brilliant. And for me, I think Nick Milanovic takes the last spot. I think in a very, very good Western Sydney Wanderers squad who have a lot of attacking options, he's also, Marco Rudan's loving him up top, playing in a very prominent, crucial position for the team, and he's delivering.
With maybe Jed Drew being a little bit stiff there from MacArthur, who's always a breath of fresh air to watch down the flank. But I'm pretty happy with that list. And Dave, summarily, that's the list. We're moving on.
Yeah, just an honourable mention to Lapane.
Yes,
at Melbourne City. Like probably all the names we've mentioned, there's been a mistake, you know, a couple of mistakes in there and some pretty, you know, dire mistakes, I guess. There was that back pass against Perth Glory that led to, you know, an Adam Taggart goal. But, you know, he also came on, was outstanding in that game against Central Coast the other day. His body of work's been pretty decent over in this December period, but scored that late goal. I think he even got man of the match for Melbourne City internally, despite, you know, playing, you know, coming off the bench, playing a short amount of time. So I think he's definitely worth a mention, and he's one who I think will come home strong. But again, when you talk about mistakes, that's par for the course with young kids. They're going to make them over the journey. Every young player around the world makes mistakes, but yeah, the coaches, the coaches that stick with them tend to reap the rewards.
Clayton Taylor, another brilliant example of that. That is the journey in the Isuzu A-League. Maybe you get to retain your spot into the next week. And what I think the other thing is you look at the resilience and the bounce back. And Taylor was immense after making that mistake. Fought hard, was everywhere, huge energy. And that's a really great sign of the young kid's character there.
There might be an angle here for Mashash.
Saturday night, Melbourne Victory 3, Sydney FC 0. It was again the Zani and Fornaroli show, but of course another brilliant moment from Mashash as well as Ufuk Talai's work looks to be cut out as he tries to make change at Sydney FC after taking over, and the honeymoon period is well and truly over. Dave, to you on Melbourne Victory, they look really, really good.
Yeah, they look the real deal. Sydney FC probably not, but look, You can't take anything away from Melbourne Victory. It was a convincing performance from the outset. Azani, Mashash and Fornaroli scoring three of their, you know, wonderful front four. Nishan Volupalai was a late omission. With Ben Falami coming in, you've still got Economidis on the bench. But they're just great to watch. Azani, that was perhaps his best performance of the season. That finish was outstanding. It was almost like he struck it, guided it with the instep, albeit from outside of the box, and caught the keeper off guard. But he looked good. He looked confident. You know, Mashash, what a finish. And, you know, Mashash with the quick feet for that assist for Fornaroli again was absolutely outstanding. But their general play was great. Just a fantastic occasion, great crowd, great atmosphere. Victory absolutely flying at the moment. I regret not going a little bit harder in terms of backing them in at the start of the season, but they are looking very, very good.
Just on Azani, Dave, I think the finish was brilliant. I mean, also set up by another moment of genius from Bruno Fornaroli on the quick free kick, but I actually want to highlight his defensive work. I think for a long time, Daniel Azani has been criticised for his work rate, for his sort of what he puts in on the other end. And I think Popovic has really gotten out of him, and you could see it on a few occasions on the weekend. He's tracking back miles to make tackles inside his own box. We haven't really seen that from Daniel Azani for a long time, if ever. And this is something he's added to his game, and I think it really is a huge help to the team and for Melbourne Victory moving forward. He's looking like some player this season.
Yeah, it's a great shout. And that's always been the knock on Azani, hasn't it? I mean, Warren Joyce, when he was at Melbourne City, the coach, when he was coming through, was pretty public in his criticism and reservations of Daniel Azani, who was coming off the bench for a lot of those games or starting and only lasting sort of 60, 65 minutes. Notwithstanding, he made the squad for the Russia World Cup and had a really, really strong impact in those games where he did come off the bench. So I'm really excited to see, from an Australian football viewpoint, where Arzani's at come the end of the season. He played 83 minutes the other night. He's just going to get better and better and better as the season wears on. There's not too many harder taskmasters than Tony Popovic when it comes to, you know, fitness and riding players hard. But Azani, I've bumped into him a few times. He's loving it. He's relishing the tough love from Tony Popovic, and he just loves the consistency and the fact that, you know, for Popovic, it doesn't matter who you are. Like, there's an expectation that you have to work really hard. So I think this was a perfect move for Daniel Azani. And he's loving his football. If he continues on this upward trajectory, and he's still got a lot of improvement to go, Asian Cup is, you know, a step too soon for him. But he gets back into the Socceroos calculations by the end of the season.
Great. And let's hope that is the conversation we're having. Jake Ufuk Talai, things don't happen overnight. They're not. It's taking some time. Your view on Sydney FC from this game?
It's an interesting one. I mean, Sydney FC had chances in this game, and if it wasn't for an inspired Paul Izzo, they may have gotten one, two, let's not say three, but a couple of goals back here. I think they were stiff. The scoreline probably stiffed them a little bit, but I think Sydney just, they're lacking a bit of rhythm, a bit of cut through. They're not the same. I mean, even they're obviously looking to the likes of Joe Lolley and Robert Mack as much as they ever did, but they just don't seem to have that same penetration. It's like when Lolley picks up the ball and looks inside, he looks up and he goes, oh, there's not a heap happening. And I think for Ufuk Talai, obviously hasn't been in the building too long. I'm not sure if this is, obviously he likes it. We've seen him at Wellington. He's got quite a specific playing style that he's trying to implement and the way he likes to play football. I'm not sure this is a playing group that's necessarily suited to the way he likes to play. And I think hopefully we'll see him given time to build his own group and put his stamp on the team. But I think for me, one thing, and I mean, you saw Jaden Kucharski come off the bench on the weekend. He'll make a difference, and he did make a difference instantly. He looked very bright off the bench. I think Max Burgess is one that's going to be a really big return for Sydney FC. He looks likely, he was named in the squad on the weekend, but didn't get up for it. Still coming back from injury. Hopefully he'll be back soon. I think he just gives them that sort of the way he drifts between the lines. He just creates a little bit of a different dimension for Sydney in attack, and I think that'll be a big thing. And I mean, I may be losing some fans here saying that I think Anthony Caceres maybe, I mean, a lot of people like to see him unleashed in that 10, and he's a silky player. I think for me, almost, you maybe drop him deeper into midfield and you slot Burgess into that 10. I think you might see a little bit more of an effective Sydney FC moving forward.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if there's a bit of transfer activity in January from Sydney FC. I think Talay will be really keen to, you know, to bring in some fresh blood, some players that, to your point, Jack, perhaps, you know, suit his system. He's inherited this squad. You know, I don't think it's a bad squad. I think it's a squad that can absolutely play and compete for finals. But I think, yeah, he'll be really keen to bring some new faces in.
It is a squad that should be competing for finals, and they need to pick up some points soon, particularly at home this weekend, to make sure they're in that conversation.
And fires it into the back of the net against the Glory. Make that 7 goals in 7 games for the man with the longest surname in the competition.
Newcastle 2, Perth 2. This was another really interesting game, and one I confess I completely misread after Apostolos Stamatolopoulos got the Jets up 1-0. My internet dropped out, and I came back and found at halftime, I found Perth up 2-1. I thought, what's going on here? Then flicked over to the other game, thought it was home and hose 2-1, and realised I'd missed the late equaliser deep into stoppage time that Trent Bahagia scored for the Jets. I think this was a game of contrasting fortunes. The Jets probably started in fairly reasonable control. Perth showed brilliant character to come back, Dave. And then, again, flip side, moment Alan Stajic wishes they didn't have, but Rob Stanton shows once again that this Jets side is in almost every single game they set out to play this season.
Yeah, I mean, it was a big decision for football fans at the weekend, wasn't it? There was the overlap with the end of that game and the start of the Victory Sydney FC game, and you had to sort of gamble, and I thought, you know what, I reckon the Jets could find something here, and I'm glad I stuck with them because I saw that late drama there and loved seeing the reaction of the Jets players, and I loved seeing the reaction of Robbie Stanton. I mean, it looked like he was celebrating a grand final win. It showed how much it meant to Robbie Stanton, you know, picking up that late equaliser. So really good signs from the Jets. Again, you know, they're on 9 points. They're lurking just outside that top 6. They just keep grafting and chipping away and picking up points, and they're just a bloody plucky team to, you know, to come up against. So credit to them. Yeah, and that late goal, as I said, referenced it earlier, you had, you know, players piling in ready to come into the box and to get on the end of it. And, you know, it was Bahagia who ended up equalising. Yes, there were mistakes. It wasn't a perfect performance, but they're looking really, really good. Now, one who was a notable omission, I think, from the next-gen tracker, Maraugus, I think he might be just a touch too old, but he's been absolutely superb for Newcastle Jets this season. And, yeah, some of their youngsters are really stepping up, and I'm liking what I'm seeing there.
Yeah, he's, of course, in the national youth team set up and is one, if you plunge the depth chart down all the way, Jake, not saying I've done that activity, you do find him on the list there. Your thoughts on and on Perth as well? Look, so close to breaking their streak of not winning away from home. Stadish was so gutted with that late equaliser, but still they have to take in particular the positives out of this result.
He really was. I think he said after the game he bemoaned basically a total lack of discipline, I think was his words. And I think that tells you everything you need to know about exactly how gutted he was by that result. They were so close. Perth Glory away from home, they just can't get it done, and it's gutting all around. But I think the Glory, there are definitely some positives to take. I mean, the form of Adam Taggart is class. He's looking as good as he ever has in the Isuzu Ute A-League. Steph Kolakowski, the redemption arc of the season so far, he looks brilliant.
Love
another great moment on the weekend from him after not playing a lot of football last year. Stadge obviously having an impact on him. But the Glory, they just can't put 90 minutes together, can they?
No, that's the issue at the moment. And you hope for their home fans. Next time at home, that's when that penny drops.
Now Piraeus off the post and in. And it's Dylan Piraeus who opens the scoring for Western Sydney.
Friday night we had a doubleheader. Western Sydney 1-0 over Adelaide, prevailing with Dylan real improvised goal there from Piraeus in the 23rd minute and withstood the late barrage after Josh Berlante's red card there, Dave. And we spoke about victory earlier looking good. Wanderers, you sense, will be there pushing victory all the way throughout the course of this season.
Yeah, they've barely put a foot wrong this season. I mean, that blip against Victory where, you know, they conceded so many goals so early, but, you know, still good signs to come back into the contest. You know, they're missing Brandon Borello, their star player essentially, so they'll get him back, you know, for the tail end of the season. They're looking good. There's a good spread of players. They've managed to, you know, replace some of the quality that they've lost. Good mix of youth and experience. And that was just a really, you know, solid professional performance, a 1-0 win at home against Adelaide United. And it looked deserved. Really good finish from Piraeus. It was a, you know, good improvisation, chipping the keeper. He's a good little player, Dylan Piraeus. He's one that, you know, he debuted at 16 and never quite got that regular run of games. And you know, he seems to be relishing his football at Western Sydney, rejoining Marco Rudin after a stint with him at Western United a few years ago. He's got pace to burn. He was always a right back, but, you know, venturing further forward these days. And, yeah, he can score goals.
Just on the Wanderers, Dave, I think it is worth mentioning, you talked about how open the league is this season. I think the Victory and the Wanderers are the two teams that are really showing their hand at the moment to be those proper title contenders. I think if you look at Marco Rudan talked about Victory's squad being the best in the league the other week. I think his is just as good, almost just about just behind them. They've got depth. They've got quality. They showed real resilience on the weekend. Every time they lose a player, the next one in seems to step up. I mean, you looked at Zach Sapsford in the Sydney Derby a few weeks ago. Can't even get a game at the moment. It's unbelievable. But I think that there's also a big question that will sort of be answered this week about just how resilient this Wanderers team is with Brillante suspended and Tom Beadling off early injured on the weekend too. They got a bit of a slot at centre-back to fill. So you saw Jorrit Hendricks slot in there on the weekend and do a very, very, very good job. Will Alex Bonatig be fit? Maybe, maybe not. If not, if Hendricks pushes back, then suddenly you've got Hendricks and Brillante out of the midfield. So do you see young Oscar Priestman step in? Do you see Dylan Scicluna come in? Another couple of young kids who could be tested to really just show how deep this Wanderers squad is.
Adelaide United. Dave.
Just a final one on the Wanderers. I mean, they've got a really solid academy, and you just look at, I mean, a bit like Sydney FC, we've mentioned it almost every week, the you know, volume of and quality of the young Sydney FC players who've kind of, or academy products who've gone, you know, and found other clubs. It's not too dissimilar. You know, with Western Sydney, you see a bunch of them over at, you know, at the Newcastle Jets at the moment, Natter and the others. So I think the quality of their academy is certainly helping that depth. There's a lot of these young players who are, you know, knocking on the door for those opportunities. So I think that's really, really helped Rudin with his selections and perhaps being a little bit more ruthless in terms of, you know, the culling of the list in the preseason.
Adelaide United's an interesting one. On the other hand, I don't think we can be hugely surprised given just the youthful nature of their squad that they've got ups and downs and roller coasters. And in fact, if I think back 4 or 5 weeks ago, the XG, which, you know, you mentioned and sometimes you snigger at it, but the signs were early doors, those brilliant results. They were slightly overperforming both defensively and offensively. So this is a bit of a levelling out, and they're going to have those highs and lows. It's almost, you know, Nestoria and Kunda's narrative is a bit of a metaphor for the entire team. It's what happens when you've got young kids, and Carl Vitt will know he's got to manage that and ride that out there.
It's almost as if they're clearly not deliberately losing, but it's as if they've just reminded everyone, hey guys, just you know, call your jets. Like, we're young, we're up and coming. Yes, we were top of the table. We were, you know, playing some unbelievable football, had a ridiculous highlights reel. But just calm yourselves, yeah? It's a long season. But I think they'll come home strong. I think, you know, Nestori obviously coming off the bench the other day, he'll come back into the equation pretty soon. They've got a reasonably long injury list as well, but they're getting minutes into some of the other players, you know, Luke Giselle and others. So I think, you know, assuming they can get, you know, most of their bodies back fit, I think they'll continue to be inconsistent, but they'll be playing finals football this season.
Completely agree, Dave. Just a little word on the story here in Kunda briefly, because you've got to talk about him every week. He's box office, but if you haven't seen the highlights of this game, there's a couple of moments from Aaron Kunda at the back end of this game that were absolutely unbelievable. Aaron Kunda's coming off the bench. He's picking up the ball like 40 metres out and taking a pop from 35 yards and actually really troubling Lawrence Thomas.
Yeah, there was one shot that was – you thought he was going to cross it, and he's gone for the technique on that shot was – yeah, agree. Got to talk about him every week when we reveal our most watched videos on social media this year in the new year period. You will not be surprised that Nestori Kunda is responsible for a hefty quantity of those.
Up against Daniel Pena, the Brazilian buries it. He gets his goal this time. Daniel Pena can celebrate once more.
West United 2, Brisbane 1. We're going to round it out with the Aloisi Derby. A lot to unpack out of here. Tremendous, tremendous result for West United, ending their horror run of six games after Daniel Pena in 83rd minute. Josh Risden in stoppage time cancelled out and then went ahead after Jay O'Shea's 69th minute penalty. Dave, tell us how palpable the relief will be for John Aloisi for this result.
Yeah, huge. That meant so much to him, as you saw. I mean, he was, he got the red card. You saw the emotion pretty clearly throughout the course of that 90 minutes. You know, pressure has been building, and that was an important win to get them off the bottom of the table. They're on 6 points. They're still second last, but just to get that confidence and, you know, to get a reward for their hard work, because they have played some reasonable football and have created chances over that you know, pretty barren period. And you could see how together the squad is, the unity, the way they celebrated that goal at the end, Josh Risden's winner. And it also meant a hell of a lot to Daniel Pena, whose wife sadly is, still battling with health. She's back in South America, we're led to believe. And, you saw Pena obviously, dedicating the celebration to his wife after scoring in that 2-1 win. But look, it was a fantastic performance from Western United against a very good Brisbane Roar side. That late goal, the late winner, and especially coming back from 1-0 down, I think that could really spark them into action. And just a final one, a shout out to Josh Risden for his attempted somersault. It was horrendous. He's landed on his knees. I'm not sure what he was thinking. Mate, leave those to Nestori and Kunda and
stay
company.
Tuned on the socials this week for footage of David Davidovic doing his best backflip now that he's put that on the line.
I'm glad.
But great to see Rizzo scoring nonetheless.
I'm glad he landed, to be honest.
As soon as he started, I'm like, what's going on here? I've never seen him attempt a somersault, and we obviously saw why.
Where do you want to go, Jake? Because I think there's some lovely stuff to talk about. And we love Daniel Pena on this podcast. There's this wonderful interview on our social channels if you haven't seen it. But tactically, John Aloisi did something really important with him too.
That's exactly where I was going to take this one, Dave. I think watching this game, I mean, Daniel Pena's been playing out wide for Western United early doors this season. He's shifted into the number 10 position and he did the business. And he does do the business. And geez, an excitement machine. Western United's hopes this season, I mean, they've struggled in front of goal. I mean, he's had a lot of shots on goal but hasn't necessarily found the target. I think Johnny A will certainly be looking at Pena as the 10 and going, yeah, I think this is the guy moving forward.
Yeah. He's almost been trying too hard, but I think, you know, in that number 10 position, he can influence a game more and he's got, you know, 180 degrees to work with. So I think that's you know, it was the right move and I think that's one he'll persist with.
And last but not least, we cannot talk about this game without the famous left foot staying planted and the less famous right foot swing at one of the signs on the side of the dugout. Let's hear what John Aloisi had to say about his red card.
If I can't show passion in the game, we're trying to promote the game. I'm not swearing at that stage. I've just run onto the field to celebrate a little bit. And then I kick the little advertising thing on the side. That's emotion, frustration. I didn't know the goal was this loud, mind you. I'm celebrating in an angry face. Anyway, I have to deal with it. I have to accept it. But it's the emotion of the game. It's the emotion of what we've been through in the last six games. And I'm not going to apologise for showing emotion. By the way, it was with my right foot. So with my left foot, then it would have been a real kick. It would have ended up in the stand.
You know, Dave, it's respect for referees is absolutely number one. But I think the thing here is John got carded for the equivalent of taking his shirt off as a player. He just went too hard. I don't think he was actually having a crack at the referee.
Yeah, the sign, the kick, it was in the direction of his bench. So, I mean, if anything, it was his coaching staff and substitutes that should have dished out a yellow card to him. But you know, I think Johnny was confused. He was he wasn't complaining. He was celebrating. He was celebrating by kicking some signage.
As you do.
I think it was a real emotional roller coaster for the Aloisi family on Friday night. But look, very happy for John Aloisi. You know, one of the greats of the game, one of the great people in Australian football. And, the players really, really got around him. So it was very much deserved.
I think we saw there is something in that dressing room. There is still a belief in their championship-winning manager. There is a lot to be done there. They were, except for that one insipid performance, they've actually been at the races throughout the season, and I think they'll continue to be competitive in this league.
Yeah, I agree. Just a word on Brisbane, but before we wrap up. I thought Macklin Freak's performance in this game was very impressive. Made a lot of very important saves. Weston could have been far further ahead and not had to rely on a 90-something minute winner. If it wasn't for him, I think he's a very, very good young goalkeeper who's coming into his own in this league. I think Brisbane, they don't look terrible by any stretch. They're a bit inconsistent at the moment, but Ross Aloisi's done an incredible job turning them around. I think Tom Waddingham needs a bit of help up top,
yep.
The youngster.
I suspect that might be the case.
And also they're missing Florin Berengay. Let's be real.
Yeah. Well, look, the thing is, and this shows the tightness of the table, that was a much-needed 3 points for Western United. But sixth spot, Melbourne City, they are only on 11 points. So Adelaide United, Newcastle Jets, Central Coast Mariners, Sydney FC, Western United and Perth Glory. There is still so much to play for over the coming weeks as they look to try to get a roll on. Rob Stannard said all it's going to take in this league is a team to get a roll on. Who will that be? It could be really anybody the way it's gone so far there. Enjoy the theatre of John Aloisi kicking that sign. There's some great audio and conversations. Our All-Access cameras and cameramen were lucky. They didn't become collateral damage. They were that close to the sign getting the vision for this week's episode out on Thursday ahead of Brisbane Roar's game. So I really am looking forward to that episode. And that is what is going to be the lead-in to this weekend, which starts on Thursday night with Brisbane hosting Central Coast at Suncorp at 7:45 p.m. Friday night, Adelaide against Newcastle, 7:45 p.m. Eastern. Saturday, four games, of course, because of the Christmas period thereafter. We go from 3:30. It's the double whammy. It starts in Wellington. It ends in Perth. Wellington against Western Sydney. Sydney against Western United. The Melbourne Derby, Melbourne City versus Melbourne Victory. And then Perth against MacArthur. There is so much to look forward to. As we speak now, the Wellington Phoenix are top of the table, a point ahead of Melbourne Victory. But the chasing pack, Wanderers, MacArthur, Brisbane Roar and Melbourne City. Where will this all wash up and end up when we resume and have our next episode in 2024? Now, before we wrap up as well, remember that we are not far off from Unite Round, and get set as well if you are not aware of the Unite Round grassroots activity. There are 4 days of action-packed football with the A-Leagues as part of Unite Round. All young people and young footballers are invited to play in the first ever Unite Cup and Girls Unite Gala from 11 to 14 January. Make this summer holiday unforgettable. Train and play like a professional at coaching clinics. Snatch a photo with A-Leagues players. Participate in the Unite Round pregame March past. And if you're the competitive type, there's a Unite Cup up for grabs for the first time in A-League's history. Best of all, each and every registered participant gets a free Unite Round ticket to see the games on the day they participate. This is a great way for young people to keep active this summer. Places are limited, so register now to guarantee a spot. Head to aleagues.com.au/unitegrassroots to register. That will be a big weekend. It's going to be a big period coming up. Dave, Jake, have a great Christmas period. Thank you, Dave. I think you've got an impeccable appearance record on the show this year. So thanks so much for your contributions and your football wisdom, mate. It's been a great pleasure having you on the show. Thanks very much.
Thank you. No suspensions or injuries for me.
Outstanding and outstanding insight as ever. Jake, thanks for coming on. Hope both sites are still functioning when you go back on there, but it's great to have your insight for the fans to hear from you this season.
Thanks for having me, fellas.
And everyone out there, again, to you as well, have a fabulous festive period. Enjoy the football here. Enjoy the football all over the world. It's been a pleasure bringing you some talk about the Isuzu A-League over the last couple of months. Hope you have enjoyed it. And until the new year, until the next episode of the official Isuzu A-League podcast, thank you for listening. Get out to a game and enjoy your football.